I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Joining us now on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus hotline, a guy that I've known since he was so young that I can't believe it when I watch these people grow up before my eyes. They get so big and pretty soon they have their own kids and they're doing their own thing and they're adults and they're in their 30s and you go, what happened? But it's been a pleasure to follow Lawrence McKenzie's journey. It's a high school player at Minneapolis Henry. State championships were the norm. I went to Oklahoma, the University of Minnesota Golden Gophers, played in the G League with the Lakers. He's done all kinds of things. Now he teaches basketball. He's a rapper. You know, yeah, he grew up on the north side, so he's got a lot of interesting thoughts about a lot of different things. Lawrence McKenzie, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
What's going on, Mike? I'm having a little bit of a hard time hearing you.
Okay, let me see if I can. I'm cranking her up a little bit more.
Okay, there it goes.
Is that better?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Lawrence, let's start with, we'll work our way through this one at a time because you got so many different interesting things you're doing. You teach basketball in the summer. Now, obviously, with the COVID-19, places were shut down, et cetera. Tell me what you are able to do, and are kids way behind because they didn't get a chance to play for a few months? Where are we at with our kids in basketball and sports?
I think a couple of kids come through and be a little bit rusty, just because it's always a little bit more difficult, just like it's thrown up on us, not being able to have a gym to go to and do at-home workouts. And, you know, there are some people who excel at an at-home workout. There's some people who need that trainer or that somebody to push them personally. And I've seen a couple of kids who came through a little bit rusty, but there's some kids who, no matter what, they're just in love with the game of basketball. And they wake up every day and they want to get out there, whether it's inside or outside. And I think those are the kids who are going to continue to excel and have came in and excelled. But I think there's a difference between playing basketball and being a basketball player. And the kids who are actual basketball players are the ones that are really excelling because they never stop regardless. If it's not outside in the wintertime, it's inside.
Yep.
So they're always playing.
So what's the best way for a kid to practice by himself? You were a basketball junkie, gym rat growing up. What's the best way for a kid to practice if he's all alone?
When I was a kid, I used to have to just watch games. I watched Michael Jordan. I watched Penny Hardaway. I watched Kobe Bryant. And I would just go out there and try to imitate their moves. Luckily, these kids have YouTube and these kids have cellular phones now. So we have our own stuff on 43 Hoops, 43 Hoops on YouTube. You can check it out. We have individual workouts. We have ball handling drills. We have footwork drills. But not only does 43 Hoops have them, they're all over the internet. So if you want to get better, it's out there at your hands to be able to get better and to find a way to improve. But you just have to want it. So whatever it is that you feel like you need to work on, you can say working on left-hand drills, working on ball handling, working on shooting. And all you got to do is type that in, and you can find a video on how to improve.
And what would you work on first if you're a kid? Is ball handling the most important thing first or is shooting the most important thing? What is?
I work on ball handling with my kids first because if you can shoot but you can't dribble, that's easy for me to take it away. Now, if I start off and I can dribble the basketball and I can get around you and I'm in control, if I can handle the basketball, it also allows me to start reading the floor and understanding what's going on. If I have to look down at the ball, that takes a whole element of the game away from me because I can't see what's going on. I can't read. I can't make plays. I can't talk to my teammates. So I always start with ball handling, and I believe that's where the confidence comes by. If I can get by you, if I can score, then that allows me to start being able to make plays with my teammates. And then guess what happens? People start backing off me, and my shot becomes a little bit easier. I don't have to be dependent on my jump shot. So I'll always work on ball handling first with my kids.
If a kid gets to be a really good shooter, is it up to his coach to get him shots? You know what I'm saying? Should you be able to set screens to get him free?
Yeah, no, of course. If I got a really good shooter on my team, and the teams I played on were like Blake Hoffarber, and even playing against guys like J.J. Redick, they're finding ways for that kid to get a shot because they know normally if he gets wide open or if he gets a good look, it's going to go in. So I know if I'm definitely going to set a play for and screen for my kids to get a shot. But you don't want to be able to have to get shots from other teammates or just sitting in the corner. You want to be able to do both. So if I can get to the basketball now, that shot's not there, I can also do something off the dribble and I'll be able to set my teammates up as well. So that's what I want to be able to do.
Now, are people coming back to 43 Hoops, coming back and training with you? Are you getting, I mean, have they come back in droves? Or, you know, are you getting a lot of action? What are you getting?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of action. I think my schedule's almost filled up for the entire summer, honestly. And people are ready to get back to the gym. There's not a lot of AAU going on right now, so a lot of kids are really hungry to get better. So I'm seeing a lot of kids come to 43. We're starting to get our camps going, a lot of private workouts and a lot of group workouts, so. It's getting pretty packed. It's getting packed. It's more and more people every single day.
Now, you are also a rapper, and you do that for a living, not just for fun. How did you get involved in it, and where are you at with it right now?
I got involved with music just from, I think, from playing basketball. I think music in basketball has always been synonymous. When you're going to the game and listening to headphones, or leaving the game, we're freestyling in the back of the bus. It was just part of kind of the culture that we that comes with sports in general. It's kind of what gets you hyped, listening to music for the game. And after I stopped playing basketball, I always was into writing, and I always loved putting words together. And I thought I would be able to use my words and use my thoughts to be able to reach people and kind of send a message, not only just about, like, what's cool and certain things that what's cool or what's fly, but I also want to be able to preach about social justice, things that are going on within my neighborhood, and let that connect. So be talking to both sides, which means I'm talking for people who live in my community and are getting it to other people. I've been in college, I've been on campuses, I've been around CEOs, and then letting these two people understand and have an understanding of what's going on with each other. So that's really the reason why I got into music. And right now I'm making a project called Straight Through. I made a project called Misfit that did over a million streams on Spotify. Mm. I have videos with over a million views. I've toured with Pop and guys like that. I've been across the country and through Canada. I think I hit every state from 2018 to 2020. So right now I'm just kind of working on this project, The Breakthrough, and excited about getting it out and letting people hear it.
How do you creatively decide what your lyrics is going to, or your rap is going to be about? Do you just sit down and think? Does it come to you in the middle of the night? How does that work?
It depends. It could come to me in the middle of the night, and I could be up writing at 2 o'clock in the morning, or it could be something that I was reading about or watching on YouTube, or an issue that has occurred, and I kind of just let that motivate me to write. And I think sometimes when emotionally driven topics are going on, like which occurred with George Floyd, there was something in me, or there's been moments that just make me want to use my voice to say something, and that's kind of like how I create. There's been songs where I look back and I'm like, I don't even know how I wrote this or put it together. It's kind of been like magic.
So, and that's what I was moving towards, was the George Floyd and the riots and the demonstrations. You grew up on the north side of Minneapolis. When you saw the video, did you know there'd be demonstrations and riots immediately? What did you think?
I just thought the video was very, very hard to watch. It was extremely hard, and I've seen a lot of the different videos of the police brutality and also the murders that have been committed on African Americans, and that one was just one of the toughest to watch. It was almost like 2020, almost like a 2020 lynching. And just by the way, the town was just so careless, and so many people were yelling to get off that man's neck. And even after he was dead, he sat on the man's neck for almost 2 minutes. So that, I think that's extremely hard to watch. And you almost testing your own mortality, especially as an African American man, and it puts something and it puts the anger into you that is just extremely upsetting. So I didn't know that was going to happen, but I knew how mad I was, and I could understand how mad everybody else was, but I didn't know it was going to go to that extreme.
Explain what that feels like. The anger is what does it make you think about things that have happened to you? Explain to us that don't know what that means when you say that anger comes, you know, right to the surface when you see that. What does that mean?
It makes you feel extremely helpless and hopeless. And I think that's something as a black man that we try to forget about, and we have been dealing with it so much. We have learned to survive and to not to thrive. Like, our thing is survive. Like, even, it was funny, the chief of the police had an interview on 60 Minutes, and he even said, he said to his kids, being a police officer, that in a traffic stop, I have to think about how to survive and get out of it. That's it. I don't want to talk back. I don't want anything else to happen. I just want to be able to survive to the next day. And I just feel like you should never have to have that mindset. And we do. And we do. I've been pulled over driving a Bentley for a video shoot with 7 guns to my head telling me to walk backwards. And if I look backwards, they were going to shoot me. And I'm telling them when I get in the car, hey, I'm an artist. I went to the University of Minnesota. If this and this, you can look me up. I'm doing this. I'm actually creating music for social change and social justice. And I asked, after they got it wrong, because they thought I was in some kind of shootout, that they said. I don't know why they would think that. They thought I was in, they said the car might have been in the shootout. And the minute I saw the police, when I got into the car, which is funny, I said, they're going to pull us over. And they ended up pulling us over, and they not only pulled us over, they caught about 6 cars on us. And I asked for an apology. I said, do I get some kind of apology for you putting a gun to me and making me walk backwards and me being scared for my life? And they told me to F my apology. And from there, I just kind of felt like, and I know I got friends who are police officers, so I understand not all police officers are bad people, but it gives them a bad name when we, as citizens, people who never, who actually have lived life their entire, who have lived life and who have been taught to go about things the right way and to follow laws and to pay taxes, the taxpayers, to have to feel like that as a human being, especially as a grown man. You can't imagine what that does to your psyche.
No, you're right. I can't. And and when that happened, how old were you when that happened to you?
That was maybe no more than 5 years ago, honestly. So I had to be around 29, 30 years old.
Hmm. Wow. But it seems to me after something like that happens, Lawrence, when I talk to a lot of people, they kind of stuff it down because they feel like they can't. Excuse me, that they can't do anything about it, that they're helpless to fight that case and to say that, you know, I was harassed or whatever. Is that kind of true?
Yeah, it's 100% true. I never even filed a complaint about it because I just felt like that's what was going to be done. And honestly, I feel like that's kind of what they want to happen, or at least the corrupt or the bad cops, is they want that to happen because they know that eventually, it's like playing a game. I always try to go compare things to basketball. Like, if I'm playing a game and the ref cheated the first game, and I'm like, okay, well, y'all cheated the first game. Let me see what happens the next game. In the second game, the refs are still kind of cheating. In the third and the fourth game, after a while, I'm gonna be like, man, you know what? I can't win this game. So, you know what? I'm going to go in and do everything I can and try my best, but I know I can't win this game, and this is the game that I'm in. I'm in a game of basketball. I can't switch the game. I can't switch the rules. And it kind of feel like, as a black man, knows all the rules. It's definitely
so
defeating a lot of the time.
So, yeah, so what you're saying is you feel like there's no hope of winning before you ever play the game, and that's kind of the metaphor for how you might feel on the north side if you've been pulled over or you feel unjustly, I don't want to say attacked, but close to from a police officer, is you feel like there's no hope in winning that in me being able to just live life on my own terms because I can't beat these guys.
That's exactly how I feel, and it's sad that I feel that way because I don't want to feel that way, and I don't want young brothers coming up underneath me or that coming up after me to feel that way. But I've been in so many situations where I've been so disrespected by MPD for no reason. Like, and you know, there's people who can say that maybe they've been in trouble or they committed a crime, or, you know, I've worked so hard and my dad has put me through so much and told me what not to do. And you work so hard your whole life to try to get away from those type of things, and you end up getting treated the same way regardless just because of how you look. That's the scary part about it, and that's what makes it sad. It's like, okay, well, what can I do to get away from this? Or what can I do to not be looked at as a criminal? Or what can I do to be treated fairly? And it's like, there's no answer. There's no real answer.
And there goes hope, right? Once there's no answer, there goes your hope.
Exactly.
Once
hope leaves, and that's when a lot of the negativity starts, because if people aren't living for anything, then they don't care what happens to them. They don't care how they act. They don't care how you look at them. Because after a while, I've tried so many times. It's like a kid in school. If I'm raising my hand to the teacher, I continue to raise my hand, and the teacher never, ever answers me, and they keep answering this other person. Eventually, I'm going to stop wanting to answer the question. I'm going to act out. And now when I'm acting out, I'm getting your attention. All I really want from the beginning was your attention.
Or if you get bullied in school and you tell people and they say, we don't believe you, eventually something's going to happen, right?
We've seen it happen. We've seen what happened.
So do you think after all of it, it's not necessarily over. I don't want to suggest there'll be more riots, etc., but I think there'll be more demonstrations going forward. Do you think a lot was accomplished? Do you think that a voice was made so audible that change is almost a certainty right now?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of change, and there have been things that have happened that have never happened in American history. Even the way they fire the cops, I've never seen that happen so fast. The things that they've been changing with the trying to reform the police, the MPD, or defunding, or and put money in other places within the community. And things are happening. I'm seeing people come together like they never came together. I'm seeing people who realize that they have privilege now. And before that, I've never realized it. Like, oh, okay, something isn't right. And they're coming together and they're fighting for the right thing. And I believe that's what's happening. And then, you know what? When people are coming together like this, fighting for the right thing, there's going to be a negative side to it, too. There's going to be people who don't like it. But I see for the most part that there are people who are coming together, black, white, native, Hispanic, fighting for what's right. And I feel like that's equality. And if we can't live as an equality, then I feel like a lot of people, if I can't be equal, I would rather not be here at all. And I think that's the point that we're getting to.
Last, I mean, your father, obviously, I go way back with, and he's quite a coach and quite a man over there on the north side. And his record as a coach speaks for itself. But, you know, one of the things, and I'm sure you've had this conversation with him probably more in depth than I have, him growing up in Miami. But there's a part of people that have lived in both that will tell you it's easier to grow up in the South as an African-American because we know the people that don't like us. In Minnesota, we're not quite sure. Can you expand on that a little bit? In some respects, it's easier to live in the South because in Minnesota, we might be nice, but there might be, you can't quite tell. Does it feel that way?
It does at times. So, you know, in the South, the racism is overt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's out here, and you know. And it's funny, there's certain places you go and there's certain places you don't go because it's out there and people understand. I think in Minnesota, it's just a little bit different because it's covered up. It's covered up and it's systematic. And people are nice, but you may meet somebody or you may work with somebody that feels the way about you behind your back but won't ever say it. So I've heard those conversations, but and I've seen that even in D.C. I remember going out there and having an uncle like saying, I went to a place, I'm going to a mall. He's like, oh, we don't go over there. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, it's 2019. Which means you don't go there. He's like, we just don't go there. And it's segregated like that. But I mean, in my mind, I don't feel like it should have to be that way, especially growing up in Minneapolis. I think Minneapolis is the opposite. Minneapolis is so culturally diverse that when you grow up inside of Minneapolis, you don't really see color like that. Mm-hmm. My whole life, I've been around so many different cultures. But the thing is, Minneapolis is only so big. And once you get outside of Minneapolis and get to the more of the suburban areas of Minnesota, it changes a lot.
Yep, no question. No question. I wish I could defend that, but I think you're absolutely right. And I don't think it changes until the suburbs meet the Twin Cities and greater Minnesota meets Minneapolis more often socially. I don't think it changes until they get to know each other, as your father has done with taking his basketball teams and finding out that East Grand Forks and Minneapolis North have a lot more in common than they think. Lawrence, I could talk with you all night about it. I appreciate it so much. Keep up the good work at 43 Hoops and beyond, and hopefully we can talk again real soon.
Mike, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate you letting me talk on your platform.
You bet. Lawrence McKenzie. That family I'm endeared to.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.